If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage. Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are just a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. Adam, I am a bit of a Borg right now.
Yeah?
He's a Borg. Oh, no! Ah! Picard's a Borg.
Yeah.
In what way? I mean, most episodes you're an emotionless automaton. But in what way are you not that today?
I'm semi-cybernetic right now. I've got diodes attached to my chest. I've got a device dangling off them. I forget what this thing is called, but it's like an EKG that I wear 24 hours a day, and I'm supposed to wear it for a week because I recently had like a big health scare.
Wow, man. This relates to your falling down, does it not?
Oh yeah, when we were on tour, I think it was in Houston, I passed out in our Airbnb at one point, not from drinking.
I found you on the floor clutching your pearls. This was just after I told a dirty joke.
I was just morally outraged.
Yeah.
I was flying to France to visit my folks for the holidays with my lovely wife, and mm-hmm. I was like trying to get myself to sleep, which is not easy for me on an airplane. But I was getting ready for bed, and I was fumbling around trying to get the air, you know, that little nipple of air that you get up on the ceiling of the airplane.
Oh yeah, you got to tweak the air nipple.
Yeah.
To get satisfaction.
So I was trying to turn that on, and I couldn't figure out how to do it. And I thought, oh, this must be some new kind of plane that has like a different, it's not just a knob that you turn. So I called I pressed the button for the flight attendant to come. And by the time the flight attendant came, I was like, oh, I'm losing consciousness. And I told him I was in like medical distress and I couldn't see. And then apparently about 5 minutes transpired, but I woke up. I had the oxygen mask on, and I had the like blood pressure cuff around my arm, and I was surrounded by doctors.
Pretty uncomfortable situation, it sounds like. Were you covered in your own piss and shit?
I managed to avoid evacuating everything, so that was good.
God, you were so lucky.
But I think maybe more than anything that has ever happened to me, this has been a series of events that expose how addicted I am to doing bits.
All I do is
bits, bits, bits.
No matter what,
you're always doing
bits, bits, bits.
No matter what,
you're always doing
bits,
bits,
bits.
I was doing bits.
Bad bit moment.
Bad bit moment.
So our Marin today after that kind of run-up is a Benjamin R. Harrison bad bit moment?
Yeah.
Wow.
Some of these are good bit moments, but like among, you know, like I'm coming out of losing consciousness And it was not easy because my wife also had a panic attack in reaction to this because she was woken up and, you know, woken up by a flight attendant and a bunch of doctors who were telling her that her husband was, you know, not well. But
if you tell me she was also doing bits in the middle of a panic attack, I'm just not going to believe you.
You've met my wife. She wasn't doing bits.
No.
But one bit I did in this moment was, hey, the bag inflates. Because they put one of those airplane oxygen masks on me, you know, the yellow cup with the elastic band and the bag.
The one they tell you specifically not to worry about not inflating.
The bag inflates, Adam.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
Wow.
Nobody thought that was funny or amusing.
You know, ask any medical professional and they'll tell you the bit portion of the brain is the last to die from oxygen deprivation.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it's subreptile brain.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
What the bit brain is.
So, you know how like we always complain about people that put their feet up on airplanes?
Oh yeah, and like you'll see videos of people who use the IFE with their toes, like hitting buttons and stuff.
Yeah. Because they wanted more oxygen to get to my brain, I was in a bulkhead seat, and they actually had me put my feet up on the bulkhead.
Hey, what airline was this?
This was a Delta flight.
Hey, Delta, big fan, medallion guy over here. You know what a great way is to get a person's feet up, to get more oxygen to their head? Move them up to first. You think that isn't worth an upgrade?
Well, first class was fully booked, but actually somebody that had a row of three seats was very kind and offered me their row of three, and I laid down for the rest of the flight, and I was fine.
You know what would have been great is if there was a seat open in first. What your wife would have done had you been moved up first for a medical reason, and how you and I both know that both of our wives would not have been okay with that.
Yeah, that would have been, there would have been a silent grudge issue.
Yeah, they would have expected a chivalrous gift of first.
Yeah. Well, why don't you take it? So all these doctors told me I need to get to a cardiologist when I get back to the States. And
because there were doctors on board that tended to you, yeah?
Yeah. And you know, like there were some concerning signs. Like I had an undetectable pulse. You know, I was not well on this flight.
I think the question on everyone's mind is, did you have the fish as the in-flight meal, Ben?
I had the chicken. And When my wife started to like show signs of her panic attack, I was like, oh man, like there might be something in the food. And
yeah.
This is like, and then like the people in the row behind us in like, you know, 45 seconds are going to start to experience their symptoms. And then it'll just be like a cascade back to the back of the plane.
Oh no. It just turns into barf plane.
Yeah.
On emergency approach.
Yeah. I could see the flight attendant contemplating the ramifications of that possibility.
Oh God. And there's just not enough barf bags.
But I, you know, we landed and I was fine. And, we got back to the States and I had an EKG at my general practitioner, which was abnormal. And they said, like, you need to get to the cardiologist as soon as you can. And so we go to the cardiologist. And it, like, this was a new GP, so I had to fill out like a whole medical history with the GP and then do it again the next day at the cardiologist's office. So it was just like, it was a lot of jumping through medical bureaucracy hoops.
And intake takes time.
Yeah. And the cardiologist is asking me about my drinking habits when she is like taking my medical history. And
I don't see what that has to do with this.
Well, I told her...
Did my wife put you up to this?
Well, so your wife actually put me on to something that I have adopted in my life, which is don't drink on weekdays. Like, just save it for the weekend. Like, have your fun on the weekend, but on weekdays, like, knock it off with the drinking. And that's actually
I believe that's called binge drinking.
that's what I told her I do. I said I try not to drink on weeknights, but I will have, you know, 5 or 6 drinks, you know, over the course of a weekend. And the cardiologist said, well, that is actually not advisable. You should try and spread it out, you know, over the course of a week. And I said, well, but then I can't get totally obliterated.
All I do is
fits.
No matter what.
Big laugh from the cardiologist when I said that. Who was pregnant, by the way.
Wow. Yeah, so you know she was missing it.
Yeah. She liked the bit. And then just a couple days ago, I went in to get this thing attached to my chest, but I also had an echocardiogram, which I didn't know that this was different from an EKG, because I just assumed that EKG was a bad abbreviation for echocardiogram. But echocardiogram is like a sonogram. It's got the same inverted wedge thing that you see when a pregnant lady has the sonogram on her belly.
Did they lube up that chest?
They lubed up my chest, and the med tech was putting the little wand onto my chest, and I said, and I put my hand on his wrist, and I said, before you do, please don't tell me the sex. I want it to be a surprise.
All I do is
fits.
No matter what.
Huge pop from the med tech, which I could not believe. I was like, as I was saying it, I was like, God, this is so fucking hack. This guy hears this every single time he does this. To his credit, gave me a big, big pop.
Wow. You're the medical community's best friend. They love this kind of patient, I bet.
You know what I realized in retrospect? The cardiologist is dealing with patients who are nervous, so their heart is beating faster. So they're probably always getting slightly skewed data, right? They probably have training to just put people at ease, laugh at their idiot jokes.
You think that's what it is?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, by saying that, you're saying that there's a chance you might have not been legitimately funny.
Oh, Adam, I assure you, I am not legitimately funny.
Wow. And that brings us to our show.
Yeah.
Our hit comedy show.
I'll tell people before we go that I've received the results of all but one of these tests, and the results have been very good. I've, like, all my blood work came back good. My echocardiogram, the results were within normal parameters, and it does not look like I have a heart condition. So far, the best guess on the part of my doctors is that I had something called a vasovagal syncope, which is just I got too hot on the plane and I passed out.
Wow.
Yeah. So I feel very lucky to be saying that right now. I was genuinely really terrified for a couple of weeks, and like contemplating what life was going to be like if I had discovered that I had like a really bad heart condition or something like that. If I was like forbidden from traveling in the future, or, you know, given some kind of amount of time to, you know, get my affairs in order or whatever. And I was like genuinely really terrified and feeling all of the feelings about that. And so I, you know, I don't want to make light of like the real shit people go through. And I feel very lucky to have so far been given very good news by the doctors, but yeah.
I'm really glad to hear that. I'm glad you ended your story with that. I was going to say, man, tell the people what the prognosis is. Don't just leave them hanging.
I make jokes as a defense mechanism, Adam.
I definitely get that. I mean, a little behind the pod is a lot of people were very worried for you for a long time, and we're relieved that at this point your prognosis is good. Though I must admit, I did contemplate a show life without you. And look pretty good.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
Finally, this thing gives up the lead weight that's been holding it back.
I considered who would be a worthy replacement for you, medical replacement for you on the show.
Did you have, I would love to, because I thought about this too, like who would replace me on Friendly Fire and who would replace me on Greatest Gen? And I thought maybe that's different people.
I thought a ton about this, and here's what I came up with. I would solo host Greatest Gen, and I would talk twice as much on Friendly Fire.
Wow.
So irreplaceable is what I would consider you, Ben.
If you talked twice as much on Friendly Fire, you'd be almost a third of that show.
I know. Yeah, it's true. That's not even a joke. That's just that's just the cold truth.
That's just math, baby.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to be stuck with you for a long, long time, Ben. In all sincerity, I'm glad things are going fine. Are we going to hear any beeps from your end with this heart Walkman you're wearing, or is that going to leave us alone for the duration of the show?
It beeps if I push the button, if I push the button, I'm supposed to write down in a diary like what symptoms I was experiencing. And I have been trying to keep that. Like if I get up and I feel lightheaded, I have pushed the button and written that down a couple of times.
How many Moleskinas have you filled with your diary entries this thing?
I mean, a few, but a lot of it is that when I, you know, go to give my dog a hug, he'll often put his paws on my chest and accidentally push it. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Dog-induced beeping.
Yeah. He makes my heart skip a beat. I love that guy.
Well, he knows as well as I do. There's no replacing you. Let's see if the episode we're going to talk about today is replaceable. We'll save that part for the end as we begin discussing Deep Space Nine Season 5, Episode 25, In the Cards.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
You know that feeling when you're at dinner with a bunch of boomers and they want to talk about the news of the day and you're just thinking about the future that they have foreclosed on and what a nightmare it is and how little you want to talk about it with them? You know that feeling, Adam? That's sort of the feeling at the beginning of this episode.
Well, what do you want, Julian? A war?
What I want is to talk about something else.
It might as well be today. Yeah. No one's having fun at the captain's dinner party.
No.
But maybe that's because he's serving slug guts again.
Maybe.
Do you think he's still on that Ferengi recipe kick?
It's another very indistinct plate of food. It could just be like that snack mix that you get in an Asian grocery store. that's kind of what it looked to me like on the plates.
Yeah.
Just kind of miscellaneous small objects. There's also a bottle of like Calvados or something going around, but it does not seem to be putting people in nicer spirits.
Yeah, it looks like there's real booze flowing, and you'd think it would be a little more, I don't know, festive or jovial, but it just can't feel that way because they've lost another ship.
At this rate, we're going to run out of ships.
Well, that's not funny.
It wasn't meant to be.
And this is the first, I mean, this isn't the first of many. Like, this is happening all the time.
Yeah.
And furthermore, there's like hoarding and looting of supplies on the station. Like, they sort of go around the table sharing their awful news.
The news is not good. I've just learned that my final words were, back to you, Linda.
Politics sucks to talk about. And this is the eve of war. You know, they can all tell that the trends are not looking good. Odo had a vacation planned and he's canceled it. You know, everything's a nightmare.
Have you ever had a dinner party go bad? And like, what did you do to save it? Like, do you have any secret weapons socially for redeeming a vibe like this?
I'm not talking to you.
Oh, but I'm talking to you.
This seems pretty tough to save. Even Captain Sisko doesn't even try. He's like, the best he can think of is just letting the crew go, thinking that they're staying out of some sort of obligation.
You know, the admonishments we've made to leave without saying goodbye at
yeah.
parties? I've
yeah.
done that at my own parties before. Sometimes that's the solution. It's just, lock up on your way out. I'm done.
That's stone cold, but I respect it.
Yeah, I mean, this is a fucking bummer. Jake and Nog were trying to work as like waiters, I guess. Sisko asks them to leave on the same, you know, like, I'm not feeling this. You guys got to go. And then as they leave, Sisko gets a radio from Ops that Kai Winn is going to be visiting the station. News of Kai Winn's impending arrival is apparently not the antidote for depression.
Indeed, it isn't. This is shitty hat on top of shitty hat. How can it get any worse?
The big fecal enchilada. Anyone else hungry?
What I like about Nog and Jake here is that they're sort of dismissed from the dinner party and they go straight to the bar. And I love a kind of secret second location that they've hatched here. Like, dinner party sucked, but it doesn't have to be the end of the night. Let's go to Quark's.
Did you think that they were drinking root beer in this scene, or are they drinking something stronger?
I mean, the assumption is root beer with them, but yeah, that's what my guess was.
Because this is the first time we've heard them talk about being drunk in an episode, so I wondered if they're old enough now or whatever.
What do you think the drinking age is?
I don't know. Like, is it one thing for synthahol and another thing for real alcohol?
How could you prescribe to any kind of drinking age when you have a bar full of aliens for whom, like, maturity is a totally different amount of time, right?
That's true. Yeah, maybe it's a little more continental in that way. It's just like, you know, like, whatever, man, it doesn't matter.
It's like Germany.
Yeah.
You can drink at any age.
It's the continental way.
And it's encouraged.
Willkommen, Zitatsu!
The deal at Quark's is that there's going to be an event the next day. It's going to be an auction, and this auction is going to be of items found from an old Bajoran derelict freighter, but not the freighter itself. I was waiting for them to drive up that freighter at the auction.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Like a classic car auction you see on TV sometimes.
Yeah, so if Kai Winn is not the antidote for depression, maybe a Mickey Mantle baseball card is.
Right, because Quark has a pad with all the items that they've recovered from this thing, and Jake locks onto this right away.
I feel like Quark should just be using eBay. Like, how is gathering a few people in the bar at Deep Space Nine a better way to generate revenue from this shit than putting it out on the World Wide Web for everyone to bid on?
I don't know. It seems like it's a pretty limiting move.
I don't actually sell anything here. I just sell them on eBay.
Yeah. Quark is not the greatest businessman of all time. We get a pretty funny conversation.
Hold up a second. Ooh. We need to say this. The reason Jake wants to get himself this 51 Willie Mays is he wants to give it to his dad. He wants to make him feel better. He thinks it's going to be the only way to lift his spirits.
I'm pretty sure I made that point with my whole antidote for depression construction.
Yeah, that seems overly complicated.
Are you insulting the intelligence of our listeners?
Depression isn't cured with physical possessions, man.
I don't disagree.
What does Jake think he's doing?
I'm talking about the premise of the episode, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean... Here's the thing about this episode. You may believe that this storyline is the B, but let me disabuse you of that right now. This is the A fucking story, and yeah. we are strapped into it until the bitter end. It's baseball card time.
It's baseball card time, and we get a big conversation between Jake and Nog about how they're going to get this card, and Jake is trying to convince Nog to give him all the money Nog has to bid on this card, because humans don't have money, Adam. They have no need for it. They've moved to a non-monetary economic system.
We work to better ourselves and the rest of humanity.
I love that Jake quotes chapter and verse what Picard says in First Contact to Lily.
We work to better ourselves and the rest of humanity.
It's like the Pledge of Allegiance. Like, everyone knows it. Everyone knows how to say it. Everyone has this answer for when a Ferengi asks you about your weird culture. Like, it's great. And even Jake, like, even Sirach Lofton, like, the spin he puts on his line reading, it feels practiced and tiring for him in a fun way.
Yeah, I really liked it. And I also really liked how he started to, like, you know, money may not be a thing, but value is. And he starts to manipulate Nog's allegiance to Sisko as a, you know, as a locus of value, until Nog admits that doing a magnanimous thing for the guy that got him into Starfleet Academy is a valuable act.
Yeah, guess what always has power, no matter what century you're in? A guilt trip. So much of this story is crazy. But Nog's 5 bars of latinum represents his entire life savings, which is an interesting bit of calculus here. Like, I think up until now, it's been hard to gauge the relative worth of what a bar is. Like, we know what a bar is compared to a strip, for example. But a life savings adding up to 5 bars, I think, is relatively new information.
I mean, how old is Nog?
You think Nog is getting, like, strips in every birthday card from Moogie? And he saves up those
how
checks?
How much postage do you need to put on an envelope if you're including strips of latinum?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Like, at a certain point, it cuts into the overall value of the latinum, right?
Yeah. You never see those bars in this episode, by the by.
Yeah, that's true.
Are they even real?
Who knows, man? They're just paid lip service.
Those bars of latinum are like the Canadian girlfriend that Nog's always talking about that goes to a different school.
Yeah, you wouldn't know her.
They're going to prom together. You'll meet her then.
Too bad they broke up right before prom.
Golden Carton.
Sisko gets a visit from Kai Winn. She is there to tell him that she's going to be meeting with the Dominion tomorrow at the invitation of the Dominion. Kind of surprising that the Dominion can just reserve a meeting room on Deep Space Nine.
They reserve the Kenar 3 meeting room. You know, it's not as big as Kenar 1, but what you do is you take Kenar 1 and you roll the partition through it.
Right.
You store that partition in the wall.
Yeah. It's a nice deal because, like, you just pay one flat fee and they, like, provide coffee and water and you get access to the business Wi-Fi. It's not like the...
It comes at a reduced rate, too, when you book a room at Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
It's not as expensive as if you aren't.
Right. You throw in the catering and it's, like, it's very synergistic, you know?
Right.
You get those, like, little sandwiches brought out during lunchtime.
Yeah, the Federation might not have monetary units, but they do have points.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You get for staying at their stations.
Yeah, you're earning a lot of IHG rewards points for this. Yeah, she's not totally sure what the meeting's about, and Sisko wants to warn her. Making an alliance with these guys right before this war breaks out is not necessarily the greatest idea, what with all the political intrigue they're known for. And Kai Winn pulls out her driver's license and shows him that it's literally Kai Political Intrigue Winn is her official government name.
She's so mean to him. She's like, apropos of nothing, she's like, yeah, all my favorite shops have moved out.
Something wrong, Eminence.
The hat shop I used to shop at on the promenade, where'd that place go?
Yeah, I'm stuck with this hat. Most people think this hat is dumb.
Sisko's like, yeah, all the good hat shops moved out once this unstable element moved into town.
Yeah. You know, Sisko is saying he and the Federation take Bajor's safety really seriously, but she is in a position where she's not so sure. And so she's gonna hear these guys out.
We very quickly cut to this auction that we were promised. We've got no time for this political intrigue storyline. Got to get back to this baseball card story. And Quark as auctioneer, I think, serves that position pretty well. He's trying to goose the action, but I think the problem is you can only fit like 20 people inside Quark's. So there's not a lot of action, and the energy is really low, too.
The stuff he is auctioning off just doesn't seem that great, as was already observed by Jake and Nog. Like, this is mostly kind of junky stuff, but The baseball card is actually not being auctioned off by itself. It's being auctioned off as part of a lot. Mm-hmm. There's like a chest with a bunch of items inside of it. And Jake and Nog are pretty confident that they're going to get out of here for about 2 bars of latinum. However, they did not count on one person starting to bid up the value of this chest pretty aggressively.
6,500 to the dark-haired person on the right.
It's a real JFK's golf club situation, isn't it?
I suppose it is.
The bid is 10 bars of gold-pressed latinum. Is there another bid?
The bid gets to 10 before they know it, and that is twice as many bars as Nog has access to. So they're out.
This was kind of a head fake for me. I thought for sure what would happen is Nog would overbid with money he didn't have, and that would be the story.
Like, right.
He's in debt, and
he's into Quark for money he doesn't have.
Yeah, I was actually very surprised that the scene ended the way it did.
They're outbid by a real Star Trek that guy. This guy was Vorin in that episode of TNG where Worf's brother Nikolai Rozhenko was relocating a colony in the holodeck.
Oh.
Remember him? He was like the historian of the primitive people that Nikolai Rozhenko had taken up with.
How about that?
And yeah, he gets the crate, and Jake and Nog do not. And that
is... he's in a couple of Voyager episodes. That he's definitely alumni. He's that guy alumni.
Yeah, I read that he and Jeffrey Combs are the only two actors in Star Trek history to play two different characters in the same episode.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, so we will have more encounters with this character actor.
I'm sure Jeffrey Combs is pissed at this guy. You don't want to come for that throne.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Combs is the king.
You and I were recently in a bar that Jeffrey Combs was also in.
Yeah, it's true. I ordered a drink right next to him, and I pulled a Benjamin R. Harrison. I didn't talk to him.
You didn't say anything? He was at the bar itself?
Yeah.
Because when I was ordering my drink, he was at a table with some people, so I didn't want to go be table interruption guy.
I mean, I wasn't sure because, let's be honest, how do you know it's Jeffrey Combs when you're talking to him? He's a man of a thousand faces.
You see if he's got a little like latex makeup still stuck to his forehead.
Yeah, it's impossible. I would have been very embarrassed to have introduced myself to someone who is not Jeffrey Combs.
Hey, are you Jeffrey Combs by any chance? I was in a coffee shop recently and I saw a lady that I thought might have been a girl I went to kindergarten with, and I didn't ask just for the same reason. Like chances are it's not.
God, what,
you know?
I don't think I remember anyone from before middle school. Like anyone.
Well, I went to the same school from kindergarten through eighth grade. So everyone I went to kindergarten with, I went to middle school with.
God, I feel like my brain is filled with langoliers, like just chewing up time, writing over it.
Wow.
Where is everybody? They've all gone.
So they follow this guy down the hallway, and he is not interested in talking to them about parting with this baseball card. He is very angry, I would say. Like he seems to be like hate walking his newly bought auction prize back to his apartment. He accuses them of being soulless minions of orthodoxy and then gets on the elevator and tells them to fuck right off.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you're called a soulless minion of anything, I don't think it's a good sign if you're looking to negotiate.
Yeah. I mean, it's one step up from being called a nattering nabob of negativism.
Tell you what, when he dismisses them saying something like, the only laws I've broken are the laws of nature. that sounds pretty pervy to me, TBH. Like, I'd probably give this guy a wide berth if I were Jake and Nog.
Why didn't you sit over there?
Like there's clinking from inside his little trunk. It's just full of Mike's Hard Lemonade.
And what's going on here seems pretty pervy, doesn't it?
That's why it looks so heavy.
Yeah.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
A bucket.
A pail.
Mr. Bucket,
I have to revert back
back to the B storyline, a jumbo tick shows up, and Wei Yun and a couple of Jem'Hadars walk through the airlock, greeted by Sisko. I was kind of surprised that the Jem'Hadars weren't asked to give up their guns in this scene.
Right? I guess, honestly, I think the headcanon here is like, it doesn't matter. Like, they know they're overmatched. Like, the tick could destroy the station at any moment, and it just chooses not to, right?
Well, that's the thing about, like, the Dominion. Like, if the tick wanted to just set self-destruct while it was docked at the pylon, it could and would. Like, nobody on right. board is going to be sad to die for the Dominion.
Right, right.
So
there's an interaction here between Sisko and Wei Yun that I wanted to interrogate with you a little bit, and I think it represents a lot about the relationship between anyone that Jeffrey Combs plays and any of our main characters, because Sisko in this scene is a hard ass with him. He doesn't want to be friends, even though Wei Yun is super psyched to be on the station, to have more interactions with Ben Sisko. He's being nice. And I wonder, and in this scene, I was anti-Ben Sisko. I was like, Ben Sisko, why are you being such a jerk to Wei Yun? He's being nice to you. And I think that comes from a quality of acting here. Like, I almost think that if you cast Wei Yun with a different actor, you may feel the way that you're supposed to feel about this. But instead, I am manipulated because of Jeffrey Combs into being on his side when I shouldn't be.
It's like, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on you. Fool me three times, like you're f***ing dead to me.
Is that how you feel when you see this interaction? Or are you pro-Ben Sisko?
I think that the charisma that Jeffrey Combs brings to the character makes this tension fun. And if it was a less charismatic performer, you would be 1,000% Sisko, you know?
It's weird, like, all the different ways that threat can be embodied, because, like, a Gul Dukat is charismatic, but he appears more threatening than Wei Yun ever does, because Wei Yun is just, like, gleeful.
Right.
But no less threatening.
I mean, Dukat has won Kira over for brief moments over the course of the series, so...
Yeah.
You know,
I think it is a really interesting quality that Wei Yun / Jeffrey Combs has. And I think it is challenging in scenes like this. And I think that's a good thing.
But enough about this boring, boring B story, Adam. Let's talk about the A story.
Let's talk about a story without any subtext at all. The baseball card story.
Still want this card. It was not the card that Dr. Geiger, our friend, was bidding on the case for. There was something else in the case that he wanted.
A 23rd century ion translator.
So Nog and Jake go pitch him on, what if we just buy this card from you? And, you know, this guy knows leverage when he sees it.
We would like to open the negotiations with a bid.
The card is not for sale.
He says, I don't want your money. What I do want is this list of things. If you can go get this list of things for me, I will give you the card. And they're like, great, great, great. Okay, we'll just go get that list of things. And they're like turning to go out the door when they're like, but wait, what are you going to use these things for? Because you have a lot of weird beepy boopy equipment in here.
This guy was suspicious right away to me. You should never trust a man with a tanning bed.
Yeah, everybody knows that, like, that's going to give you skin cancer, you know?
He's like 50. What are you doing with a tanning bed?
Yeah. Come on, man. You got to take better care of your skin.
Yeah.
But he goes off on this rant. He is a bit of a mad scientist type. He has set his sights on cheating death. And the way he would like to do that is by perfecting his cellular regeneration and entertainment chamber. Because he has determined that it is the drudgery of mitosis that causes cells to eventually give up and die.
Why should any of us end up as putrefying corpses in wooden boxes stuck in the ground? Or vaporized into subatomic particles and vented into the cosmos like a bad case of gas?
It's an amazing theory. I'm ready to believe it. He makes a very persuasive argument that it is cellular boredom that causes death.
I'm pretty sure that that's definitive.
Yeah. Yeah. He's kind of a crackpot.
Yeah.
And even to the extent that, that Jake and Nog do that thing where they're like, hey, we're going to go talk over here for a second.
Yeah.
And they're like, they're in hushed tones talking about what a whack job he is.
Hey, this guy's pretty crazy, right?
This is a moment consistent with an earlier scene between Jake and Nog where they're talking about Jake not having any money. What Dr. Geiger wants to do is horse trade.
Horse, earth horse.
He doesn't want money for the card. He wants stuff for the card.
Yeah. And this sets in motion a sort of a vintage No Jay series of hijinks. It's a,
right.
They're pitching Chief O'Brien.
I am Chief Miles Edward O'Brien.
On getting them one of these objects, and they wind up promising to do some calibrations that he has to do on his behalf and to free him up to get them whatever the thing is.
I owe you one.
They promise to get Dr. Bashir's teddy bear back from Lita in order to get something from him.
A kooka what?
Kookalaka.
Which gives us probably the creepiest scene in the history of the show, which is Nog like Smeagol fingering over Lita to try and snatch this teddy bear from her sleeping arms.
I envied how deeply Lita sleeps, but good Lord, if you know you're a deep sleeper like that, I think you got to put a chain over the ventilation shaft.
Yeah, when she goes to bed, she does the chain lock on the door, and then she goes down to the ventilation shaft and does the chain lock on that also.
It's interesting, the thing that we know from this series of vignettes is that labor always has value, because what Jake and Nog are trading in exchange for these things are like doing favors that other people are unwilling or unable to do for a variety of reasons.
Can't automate that. Wake up, yeah. Sheeple.
Yeah. Try taking those jobs.
We get a brief scene between Sisko and Kai Winn, and Kai Winn tells Sisko that what Wayun has proposed is a non-aggression pact between Bajor and the Dominion. And this is tough news for Sisko, because there's not really, like, he can't offer her a better deal, because if a war breaks out, he can't really promise her that Bajor will be 1,000% safe. Only the Dominion can promise that.
I was waiting and waiting for Kai Winn to drop the bomb that she eventually does. She correctly points out that it was Sisko himself that prevented the first time Bajor attempted to join the Federation.
Right.
And she's like, what the fuck are you talking about, man? Like, this is basically your fault anyway. I love that.
But even if they had, he wouldn't be able to promise Bajor safety.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, it's...
But it is a neat destabilization of that conversation, though. It really, I think it puts Sisko off balance.
Yeah. I mean, I think that... Like, it's a really interesting episode about how resources are finite. And even in a post-scarcity utopia, resources are finite. And it puts her character in a really interesting position, too, because she very explicitly got into the business of being Kai for the power, not for the responsibility. And now the responsibility is on her shoulders and she is bad at it. And
right.
It's one of the most humble moments we've gotten from her, because she just turns to Sisko and says, how can I save Bajor? Like, what do I do? You tell me.
Tell me what to do and I will do it.
Yeah, and neither avenue seems particularly good. She can either align with the Federation, in which case Bajor would be the first planet to fall, or if you take the Dominion route, they'd survive, but they'd be under Dominion rule, which would feel, I think, a lot like Cardassian rule.
And it's already Team Cardassia.
Yeah. So Sisko's advice is to stall for time. It's the third the third leg of this decision, which I think is pretty great. He's like, war hasn't happened yet, and we don't know when it will. There's no downside to stalling here. Why don't you just wait it out for a little bit longer and see if there's another path that reveals itself?
This ain't a space race, so why are you rushing?
I like this advice.
I do too. It's a strategy I like to employ in my own life. Like, why make a decision now when you can make one much, much later?
I'm all for it.
Yeah.
So at this point, Dr. Geiger has gotten a lot of the crap that he wants, but not all of it. He starts to install stuff that Jake is delivering to him into all his machinery, and the machinery, you know, powering up starts to really make a hell of a racket, and we get a pretty fun like pan up through the ceiling and the upstairs neighbors that Dr. Geiger has been unfortunate enough to get is Wayoon and the Jem'Hadar.
Who booked these rooms? Like, when they checked in, you got to know what you're doing, right? When you put Wayoon and co. above the weird doctor.
When you're the doctor and you're checking in with Ensign Hospitality, you put, you know, your $20 bill down on the desk at the check-in and say, hey, I'd love to be as far away on the station from any Jem'Hadar as possible. I'd love to take care of you. And you just inch that $20 bill toward them, and then Ensign Hospitality says, sir, I can't accept any money for that kind of thing.
You know Wayoon is an IHG Latinum member. Like, how is it that he doesn't have his choice of rooms?
Who says he doesn't? It might, you know, that upper floor might be all the good rooms.
Is he bunking with the Jem'Hadar? Like is he two queen beds guy?
I think that he summoned the Jem'Hadar to scan.
All right, that makes sense.
Do Jem'Hadar sleep? Or does he just have him go invisible and stand in the corner when he's sleeping?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, dude. Even if they're invisible, I think I'd have a hard time sleeping.
Yeah, because you're trying to ejaculate on the TV remote, and you're just like conscious of the fact that they're invisible but in the room watching you.
Remotes are for butts, Ben. They're not for shooting ropes onto. That's just gross.
Pardon me. I guess I've said too much.
God, the last couple of times I've been in a hotel, my remote just flat doesn't work. It never works.
Yeah, because people like sucks. Ejaculating on it, Adam.
God. You're suggesting that the hotel remotes are too full of cum to operate properly?
Yeah. See, I just thought they're a little heavier than they look.
Yeah. Yeah, they feel like snow globes. they feel weighty, full of liquid.
So Jake and Nog arrive with a second batch of crap for the doctor, and like kind of for the second time in the episode, they walk into this room with their jaws dropped. But this time the camera pans around and the room is empty. It's not the mad scientist laboratory that they walked into the first time. And it's there was never a Dr. Geiger even registered here.
That means the large Marge I was riding with was...
her ghost.
Right. Yeah, that's creepy knowledge. When they tell the story to Odo...
Mr. Bunkin?
It almost seems like the crime is their... reporting a fake crime, because when Jake and Nog leave Odo's, they're like, wow, we got threatened with false reporting and obstruction of justice.
Yeah.
It's not a good moment. They think they're doing a good thing, but they did a bad thing.
Odo is really quick to hand out these accusations.
It's because when Jake explains the story of Dr. Geiger, he sounds as insane as Geiger did initially.
That's true. So they realize that the person that they're going to have to talk to is the Kai, because the other person that was bidding for that baseball card was a Vedic, and they've seen the Kai talking to that Vedic. So the Kai bids farewell to Wayoon. She's like heading back to Bajor. She sort of, in her classic way, doesn't commit to a final answer with Wayoon on the whole non-aggression pact idea. Because I guess she's going to go give advice to the first minister about what to do, but declines to tell him what what her advice will be. And she comes around the corner. And there's Jake and Nog kind of like, hey, nice Kai robe there. Be a shame if anything happened to it. I don't know what that means.
This is a really fun sequence. You see this fairly often, though. We get a surprise establishment opposing a couple of characters, and then we cut to the consequence without seeing the argument that precipitated the consequence, because we smash cut to Cisco's office, and he is howling mad.
You accuse the Kai of burglary and kidnapping?
The captain explodes at the insult that they have leveled against the religious leader of the planet Bajor.
Are you trying to be funny, cadet? Because I'm not laughing.
And this is a bad look for Jake and Nog.
I feel like you can make the case for what Jake is doing up until this point, at this moment, it all flies apart, because Jake is committed to the idea.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got to get that baseball card to make his dad happier.
He's so committed to the idea that he maintains the cover-up because he wants to surprise his dad with it. And by telling him the truth in this moment, he would be ruining the surprise. Nog is like, when they leave this meeting, they're walking out into ops to the lift, and Nog is like, you need to get some perspective, man. Like, losing the trust of your father over this and ruining the diplomacy between Bajor and the Federation maybe isn't worth your gift idea. And he's right.
Yeah.
He's never been more right than this moment.
No, yeah. And also, like, telling your dad that you and I got drunk and that's part of why this is all happening.
Right. Yeah, I think that answers your root beer question earlier. Like, that was a lie, so they didn't get drunk.
Right.
It was root beer.
But a pretty intense thing to tell your dad is why you're acting like an idiot.
Is root beer a suitable mixer for any liquor? I don't remember ever, like, it's not like Jack and Coke. I don't think I've ever had a Jack and root beer.
Root beer float spiked with spiced rum is one of the delightful adult beverages, Adam.
Oh, I bet that's real good.
Yeah.
I bet that's real sweet, too.
Doesn't have to be. You can put a lot of rum in.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, that's what you do. It's just more booze.
Yeah. Knock that sweetness back with more booze.
More, more,
more.
Dude, sweet.
More,
more,
more.
In here, buddy.
More.
Stop. Hammer time.
So they're on this elevator arguing about what an idiotic ploy this was on Jake's part when they get transported over to the Super Tick. And yeah, they have a, kind of like a, like waiting for the principal moment. And then Wayun comes in and sits at the desk. He's got the Aeron chair, Adam. That's the same chair that you and I use.
Love that chair.
Did you notice that Wayun is an Aeron user?
I mean, he's a smart man.
Yeah.
He's lived 1,000 lifetimes. Like, I think you know from experience what a great seat the Aeron is.
This Tick is the hottest water that Jake and Nog could find themselves in. And Wayun asks them to explain what their relationship is with Geiger, because Wayun has taken Geiger and all of his crap aboard the Tick. And, you know, he kind of scoffs at the dumb explanation that is the real explanation at first, because he knows a lot about what Jake and Nog have been up to. He knows that they've been meeting with the senior staff. He knows that they met with Kai Wynn right after Wayun did. And so Jake pivots to novelist explanation, which is, yeah, we're actually working with Starfleet Security.
We're investigating the man whose picture is in your hand right now. Until yesterday, that man, one Willie Mays, did not exist in any historical documents.
There is a really neat magic trick that I really haven't considered before, which is a lie in proximity to the truth makes the truth way more believable.
Yeah.
And that's what happens here in Wayun's experience. He's like, well, that was shit.
Yeah.
I guess I'm going to go with column A.
I loved it because it's like, it's a pretty light and silly episode. But this lie that Jake comes up with is something I could see Star Trek trying to make an episode out of and is so much sillier and more laughable that it, like, it retroactively makes the episode feel good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Wayun picks column A, he gives him the baseball card, and and lets him go. And then Wei Yun and Geiger are like hitting it off.
I have a background in, shall we say, creative genetics. I'd be most interested in hearing your theories.
Well, it may take some time to explain.
I don't like Dr. Geiger's chances of living a normal life after this episode. I mean, there's no record of him on DS9, so like if he never existed, what happens here doesn't qualify as a disappearance. He's just gone. He'll never be found.
Nobody's going to come looking for him.
Yeah.
But he gets back to Deep Space Nine because we get like a captain's log as the button of the episode. And Sisko is reminiscing about how a couple of days ago, everybody was really bummed out about the politics. And suddenly morale has improved wildly. And we do a little montage of like going around the station. Chief O'Brien's had some time to do a little bit of kayaking. Bashir's got his bear back. Lita is the one bit of salt to bring out the sweet. She's pissed that the bear is missing. Kira has delivered her speech to the Water Conservation Board. It's gone great because Jake wrote some bits for her. Worf is enjoying his Klingon opera because the Nog has been able to improve the audio. Geiger has even got Wei Yun enjoying himself, showing him around the cellular regeneration and entertainment chamber. And Sisko's enjoying his baseball card.
And yet we are still just as on war's doorstep as ever. But it's the little things, right?
It's
the little comforts.
It's the little comforts, you know?
Yeah. Did you like this episode, Ben?
I spent a lot of this episode thinking I hated it, and by the end, I did like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought that was amazing.
I mean, clearly, there's a lot to make fun of here.
Yeah.
But in the end, like, in totality, it begs you not to take it seriously. And I think it's effective in that way.
It's a self-consciously corny episode, but to a sweet end, you know? I really liked it.
This was the first episode directed by Michael Dorn.
Whoa.
The first of three that he will direct in DS9. I thought it was ably directed by him. I think it explains why you get very little Worf in the episode. I think I'm with you as far as whether or not I liked it. It is just a little piece of candy in this DS9 season 5 storyline that can be pretty serious and bitter tasting, but this was just a little bit of a break here that for some reason worked. I kind of like the red paperclip idea to this thing that, you know, you can chain some small favors together and create a solution to a problem in it when you don't have money to solve it, you know?
Yeah.
That was cool.
You know what else I think is cool, Adam? Our priority one messages. Do you want to see if we have any?
Hey, those take money to make happen. Don't try to trade us favors or labor for a P1. It doesn't work that way.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our one and only Priority One message comes from past Jenna, and it is for present Jenna. The message goes like this. Hey, Jenna, it's you from the past. You're at home, alone, for Christmas. Recovering from double otitis, hopped up on painkillers, and spending money you don't really have for a shout-out from your favorite podcast hosts.
Wow.
Hoping this will put a smile on your face wherever you find yourself. You're a capable badass and you will get your groove back.
I believe it. Jenna sounds dope, both past and present.
Double otitis, so much worse than single otitis because of course it is a double ear infection. That sounds painful.
Ugh. I used to get ear infections all the time.
I'm going to guess Jenna is an adult because only adults should be listening to this piss and shit show. But yeah, I know the last ear infection I had was in middle school. It was super painful, though.
Yeah, that sucks.
Get well, Jenna's past and present.
Yep. Get well, Jenna's. And keep kicking ass and being awesome. Thank you for the P1. If you would like to leave a P1 on The Greatest Generation, head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. We really appreciate them because they help us cover the cost of making this program.
Gotta get that gold press latch.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times, and it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them, and that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply. Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped, this season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Adam.
What is that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
When Weiyun is in an episode, it's going to be hard to choose against him. I am going to nominate Weiyun for drunk Shimoda here. He is, and I mean this as a compliment, and I think he would take it as this. I think Jeffrey Combs is the Christoph Waltz of DS9 because he is like the Hans Landa in Inglourious Basterds that Weiyun is here. That
the
interrogation
villain that is
scene,
full of zeal.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's that scene where he's interrogating Jake and Nog here that really solidified that for me. Like, this interrogation is gentle and comedic.
Yeah.
And he has all the power, and in fact it is lethal power. But you sort of forget that because he's so charming.
Yeah.
I think he's just great. He's great in every scene. I don't know how many episodes of DS9 we have left. I hope as we bring the series to a close, there are a lot more episodes with Weiyun in them because he's just fantastic. So yeah. He's my drunk Shimoto. What about you, Ben?
I'm going to give mine to Jake. There is probably the most unfortunate part of the episode is a little interchange between Jake and Nog when they're looking at Kai Wynn up on the second level of the promenade talking to that Vedic. Mm-hmm. And Jake says something about bearding the lion in its den. And then Nog says, lions, geigers, and bears. And Jake says, oh my.
Hmm.
Really wish that wasn't in the episode. So Jake gets my drunk Shimoda for that moment. I mean, it really should go to both, but if I had to pick, it's really more Jake's bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Jake said a bad thing.
Yeah.
Well, is there a good thing coming up in the next episode, Ben? What is the episode and how will we be watching it?
The episode is season 5, episode 26 of Deep Space Nine and episode 300 of The Greatest Generation.
Wow. 300.
It's called A Call to Arms.
This is The Greatest Generation.
Deep Space Nine prepares to face a Dominion / Cardassian attack.
Wow, the Cold War turns hot, huh?
Yeah, baby.
Is this the season finale of season 5?
It is.
All right. Big one.
Crazy bang to end season 5 on episode 300 of our show. I have no idea how that worked out, but...
I mean, you'd probably... I mean, I know you're not a gambling man, but if you were, you'd have to bet everything that this is going to be a cliffhanger, right?
Yeah, I'm pushing all my chips into the middle of the table.
Got to push in like you're Ken Jennings or something.
Yeah.
Double it up.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, are we going to be watching this episode in a particular way? Only the Game of Buttholes Will of the Prophets can tell us.
That's true, Adam. Do you want to fire that thing up?
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Twinkly Shuttlecraft is currently pulsating on top of Square 40, where off in the distance is a Coco Nono. It would take a roll of a 6 to get there. I'm gonna roll.
Go for it.
Get away from me, man. I'm gonna roll. I swear to God, I'm gonna roll.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
And I have rolled a 3. A 3 lands us on a regular old episode at Square 43 on the Game of Buttholes. And that is how it will be for the season finale of season 5 and our 300th episode.
Hey, you know, we would really appreciate you leaving a nice review in honor of the 300th episode. The iTunes reviews could really use some juice. If you'd like us to answer a question, leave it in the form of a question. Yeah. But also, you know, like episode 300, this is a big deal. We've given a lot of pot out in the history of this show. And if you can find it in your heart to review or recommend the show to somebody, that would be really awesome.
I haven't been looking at the odometer of this show, and I'm really surprised that it's 300. This is an older podcast now, Ben.
Yeah.
It's got some miles on her.
We're running into the ground, really.
Yeah, it really smells like shit inside. You're not going to get this smell out of the upholstery.
One of the many mechanics keeping this thing operational is our buddy Adam Ragusea, who makes custom music for the program. He, of course, based all the music he makes on the work of Dark Materia. And he is now a YouTube sensation with the Adam Ragusea cooking channel on YouTube.
Occasionally, we'll pull this pod car up to a stoplight, and a bedraggled man will come to the vehicle with a squeegee and some newspapers. That very funny man, is Bill Tilly. You can find him on Twitter at Bill Tilly 1973. He's using newspapers that are, in fact, comedy baseball cards that he makes for every episode we make, you and I. And, I mean, I wish he would take a tip, but Yeah. He doesn't. He just squeegees our windshield and lets us go on our way.
We've retooled this thing a few times with parts that we've found on at various junkyards around the internet. Of course, there's the Greatest Gen Facebook group. There's all the folks on Twitter that use the hashtag Greatest Gen. There is the Reddit sub and the Greatest Gen Wikia. There's all kinds of junk out there related to this show.
You know sometimes how you'll give someone a ride and they'll offer to give you gas money? You know, if you've driven them a long distance, I think we can say, you and I, Ben, that we've driven our pod passengers, our friends of DeSoto, quite a long distance. If you'd like to chip in some gas money, you can do that over at MaximumFun.org/donate.
Yeah, it's ass gas or grass, or just donate at MaximumFun.org.
And with that, we will be back at you next time for episode 300 and a great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation, which finally shoots at something.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.